Alright, I got some I got some things that I can do a little read of.
Eat a couple more chips.
Eat some chips.
Chips, chips, chips.
Eat those chips like your life depends on it.
I always feel.
I don't know why. I was so entertained by that.
You're welcome.
My mom would be so proud.
Are you a good witch or a bad bitch? Bad bitch, bad bitch.
I've been a rebel all my life.
We will not remain hidden figures. We have names.
Oh, if it's naughty to ruse your lips, shake your shoulders, shake your hips, and let a lady confess I wanna be best.
I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know.
Hi. Oh, wait, I gotta close this window.
Kitty's gonna be so upset. Closing that window down. Denied your capability to be a nosy little shit.
Haha. I'm just gonna put this right here so that I can read it easily. Girl, hi.
Hey, girl, hey. We're in 1993 again.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey, girl, hey. How's it going?
I would say fair to well.
Okay. All right.
It's Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I'm here with you and Benjamin and Alex.
Uh-huh.
I feel happy.
And the cat?
Eh.
Mm. Kinda.
Ah, never mind.
Mm. Okay. Fair enough. Welcome to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Hello, hello, hello.
Deanna, what is our podcast about?
We have a podcast. It
yep.
exists.
Uh-huh.
We put it into the world weekly, and it is about ladies. Ladies and ladies and ladies, and how great they are, and the things that they've done, and the things that they continue to do. There's a
hold
siren.
For the siren, yeah.
Hold for siren.
I love how periodically the hold for noise ends up getting into the podcast anyway.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just works.
Sometimes
anyway, yeah. Podcast about ladies loving ladies.
Oh.
Well.
It's sexy?
Sometimes.
Okay.
I think, don't you?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Especially in Pride Month.
Well, yes.
Very ladies loving ladies.
Yeah.
I'm Deanna, that's Hannah.
Get that out of the way.
Let's get it out of the
way. It's not that exciting.
I've got a red nose on today.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't really know what that's about.
I got it from Walgreens.
Yes, you do.
Just for free.
Oh, they were just giving them to you?
Yeah.
Ah.
It's glittery.
Yep.
Oh, oh no. Benjamin's taking a photo for the social meds.
Yeah, because we've been really bad about taking pictures of ourselves.
And now it looks kind of like a mouth.
It looks like lips.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Hello. Hello, Hannah.
Well, last week we didn't rant.
No.
And I kind of liked that because... the world is awful, as I continue to say. So I like the idea of just kind of like every once in a while...
taking a break from ranting?
Taking a break from ranting. And I think that our listeners appreciate that as well.
Our listeners appreciate
I think our
a
listeners,
gentle caress
yes,
of the voice.
They do appreciate
rather it. Than screams.
I think so. So.
So what are we not ranting about this week?
Oh, God. Probably, I don't know, more... dumb shit Trump has said.
No, what are we not ranting about?
I know, but that's what... Okay.
That's we would rant about that. So what are we not... What do you have to tell me that's not ranty?
Oh, well, so you remember
Hannah.
Last week I did...
Lady Cops?
Some, like, yeah, like a newspaper article. I found a few more. And I'm just... I find them so entertaining. There's just something so... like, there's something so interesting about getting those little bite-sized looks into... everyday life for, you know, people in random times.
Yeah.
And the few that I'm going to read for you are, like, I don't actually know which year some of these are, but they're mostly between, like, 1920 and 1930.
Sweet.
So, without...
Further ado,
I'm just going to read some of these to you because they're hilarious. This one is, woman uses an axe, saving her husband. Which is
woman a- uses an axe for the first time in history.
Well, the way this starts, you would think so. Instead of fainting when her husband fell insensible with a live wire clenched in his fist, Mrs. Matt Kramer seized an axe, chopped the wire in two, and saved her husband's life.
What a surprise!
It's so shocking! Kramer was moving a heavy lighting wire, which carried the current to his house. A heavy storm was raging, and when Kramer grasped the wire, a stream of water trickled down it from the converter, and he received a shock, which burned his hand to a crisp and knocked him unconscious.
Oh, God.
His wife rushed for the axe and severed the wire none too soon. I just love that the first
line quick thinking on her part.
Well, because women don't do that.
Women don't know how to think quickly.
No. Normally, we just faint.
Instead of fainting. Like, no shit.
Shocker.
Jesus.
Shocker. I didn't think about that until just now.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
This one is just a weird little thing. There's no headline. I think it's like an ad. And it says, think of it. A young girl realizing that this is the age of speculation eschews athletics, science, and philosophy and goes in for specializing on the emotion. She's a love doctor. She'll open your eyes. She'll pull off the greatest series of love matches history ever recorded.
I thought you were going to say love making. And I was like, whoa!
Love making.
What an ad.
It's for porn.
It's Dr. Ruth.
Yeah. Here today and tomorrow only.
Maybe it was Dr. Ruth. I don't know. She's old as shit.
Constance Talmadge.
Oh, never mind.
Sorry.
You burst my bubble, Hannah.
My bad. This one, so I haven't read this one yet, but I kind of am intrigued by the headline. It says, Poison Pen Turns on Girl's Mother. And this was Atlantic City, October 31st, 1920s-ish. So the author of, quote, Poison Pen Letters, who has been annoying Miss Emily Ott, and by the way, Poison Pen Letters at the time were, like, from my understanding, letters that people would send that you didn't address them as yourself, and they were basically for harassment purposes.
Shit-talking letters,
yes.
But anonymous?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like pre-internet trolls.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Exactly. It's postal trolls.
Yep.
So the author
takes a lot of energy.
So much energy.
Yeah.
The author of Poison Pen Letters, who has been annoying Miss Emily Ott, pretty blonde daughter of J.B. Ott.
Of course she's pretty blonde.
Today transferred his or her attentions to the girl's mother.
Uh-oh.
When letter carrier Moore, I don't know, I guess the letter carrier who they're talking to, announced to Mrs. Ott that he had a letter for her on which postage was due, and because you could apparently send letters a lot like collect calls, where
it's like, oh, there's no stamp on this, so you gotta pay for it because we delivered it.
Exactly.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So women had to pay to be harassed.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah. So when he announced to Mrs. Ott that he had a letter for her on which postage was due, and that it was apparently from the anonymous letter writer, she declined to receive the missive. The letter was turned over.
No thanks.
No thank you. The letter was turned over to the postal authorities. The latter have ascertained that one of the notes to the daughter was written on the letterhead of a prominent legal firm. Miss Ott declares that she has no love affairs, which could result in a rival seeking revenge in the penning of the notes.
Oh, my Lord.
And is at a loss to understand the motive lying behind the attacks. Mr. and Mrs. Ott are pursuing an investigation with the aid of postal inspectors, and they hope to round up the culprit who, they suspect, is a woman.
Why?
Don't know. Because only women are spiteful and terrible in that way.
And emotional and... Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was fun.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to do one more. And I didn't read this one either, but this one, the headline is Unkissed for 2 years, wife sues.
I mean.
I know. Let's dive into that one. So this was in New York. A man who can't appreciate the superiority of patent fasteners over buttons for women's gowns and refuses to kiss his wife before relatives and permits her to go unkissed and unhugged for 2 years.
How dare he? Unhugged?
Unhugged.
They shouldn't be married.
No, you're not. Maybe he shouldn't. Yeah, anyway.
He's probably
not
into ladies.
Yeah. this is enough to cause any woman to take up a position in which... she can earn $25 a week and to seek a legal separation from her husband. I don't know how any of those two, how any of those things match up.
I guess she's like, well, you're not fucking me. I'm not taking a lover because I respect our marriage vows, so pay me.
So pay me. Also, apparently she has a patent for a gown fastener that he's, like, not letting her get.
Because he's her husband, so he can stop her from getting it?
Possibly.
Whatever.
Mrs. Scary testified that she... Scary. testified.
How do you spell that?
S-K-E-R-I.
Oh.
Yeah.
Scary.
Who knows? Testified that she married him July 10th, 1910, in this city, and that they went to Europe for their honeymoon. Aww. While they were on the boat and on the way over... Oh, while they were on the boat on the way over, she said her husband went through her trunks, and after telling her never to use pins on her clothes, ordered her to replace all fasteners on her dresses with buttons. On a... I don't know. On a later...
What a weird fight.
Fucking strange. Okay, on a later occasion, she said he objected to the cut of a house dress and made her rip it apart and remake it 3 times before he was satisfied. yeah.
Okay.
His chief objection, she testified, was the way the seams on the inside were finished.
Why does he care? It's not his clothes.
I don't know. It's Trieste, I don't know, where they stopped on their honeymoon, they had their first quarrel, she testified, and he allowed her to go several days without kissing her.
Several days, that's rough.
That's rough. Anyway, that's the end of that, but I thought that was like...
Hey, I'm in a long-distance relationship. Do you think that I can...
You can sue.
Sue him for not kissing me?
Oh, absolutely.
Good luck, I don't
need
money.
Oh, shit.
Well, fuck. No money means you might not get what you are looking for there.
Well, then just give me kisses.
Okay.
Men, just give your wife kisses, and then you won't get sued. Also, don't make them remake their dresses 3 times, because that's like, I mean, that's overkill. Right?
I would think so.
I really want to know the fucking bizarre behavior behind that. Like, I want to understand
that. Their marriage sounds very strange in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
No, I don't get it.
What, he went through her stuff on their honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
He probably, like, pricked his finger on one of the fasteners because he was going through his stuff all shoddily.
Yep.
And then was like, fuck, that hurts. Bitch, I want to go through your shit all the time. You can't change this so that I can be nosy. I don't know. That's like the, don't you think?
Uh-huh. That's probably exactly what went through his head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who are you going to tell me about this week?
So
stoked.
Okay. So we are on, I think this is the last day for us to be doing
Pride.
Yeah. So technically when this drops, there will be a few days left, but we won't have another episode during Pride. So I picked somebody with, you know, that in mind.
Of course.
As you do.
And after this month is over, we won't be talking about any more gay women ever.
No gay women ever. It's not going to happen.
Hashtag sarcasm.
Yeah.
In case any of you were like, wait, what?
I think most women are secretly a little gay, so, I mean,
not all.
You know.
Hashtag not all women.
I know, I said most.
I'm full of hashtags today. Gross.
You're full of hashtags?
Yes.
How do you...
Full of it. I'm full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put my nose on.
Yeah, put your nose on.
Hashtag smiling pile of poop.
Smiling pile of poop. Smiling pile
of poo. Of poo. Of poo. Yep. So,
all right.
Who is this queer woman we're going to talk about today?
All right. Okay. So, before I dive in, I took information from a few different places, Wikipedia, The Advocate.
Nice.
She also has a website.
Oh.
Well, she doesn't have somebody made a website about
her.
And okay. So I took information from that. And I think that is it. Yeah. So I stole this intro from The Advocate because I liked it.
Great.
I'm going to talk to you today about a woman named Alla Nazimova.
How do you spell that? Like, not the last one I get. How do you spell her first name?
A-L-L-A.
Oh.
So, Allah or Alla?
Alla Nazimova. Mm-hmm. I don't know her.
But I think it's Allah, and that's how I'm going to say it. So if anyone...
Miss Nazimova.
...has a correction for me, yeah. Okay, so... the revered Russian actress made it from the Russian theater of Chekhov to the Great White Way, where she was discovered by Hollywood and became the prototype of the exotic screen vamp.
Oh!
Yes.
How do I not know of her, then?
After,
I mean, in depth.
Yeah. After two husbands won a, quote, lavender marriage...
What does that mean?
I'll tell you in a little bit. She converted her West Hollywood compound into a playground for the rich, famous, and sexually promiscuous.
Nice.
From then on, it was women only. She bedded the famous, the powerful, and merely mercenary, including a rumored affair with Rudolph Valentino's wife.
So, women only in this compound, huh?
For her, you know, after a certain amount of time, yeah.
Holy shit, I'm so excited about
there,
this.
Yeah.
This is great.
It's interesting. There's a dispute among all of the sources that I checked about whether or not she was bisexual or a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that's just because
she was married to men, so we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, with that in mind, Alla Nazimova was not, in fact, Alla Nazimova's given name. She invented the name as she made up so much of herself. She was born Adelaida Leventin in Yalta, which is in the Crimean Peninsula, in 1879, and she was the youngest of three children in a brutal ne'er-do-well Jewish pharmacist and his affluent, unstable wife.
Good! So she had a really good childhood, it sounds like.
She had
like.
A fabulous childhood. I took this little paragraph from...
A ne'er-do-well pharmacist? What does that mean?
I don't know, but I kind of liked it, so that's why I stole it. I stole it from the New York Times.
Like, I'll give you your meds, but in the wrong dosage.
But in the wrong dosage. I'm a little bit evil.
You have the flu? Let me give you cold medicine.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure it was more sinister than that.
It was much more sinister. I don't know. I don't, there's no information on how he screwed over patients. So, brutal ne'er-do-well Jewish pharmacist and his affluent, unstable wife.
Oh, God.
She adopted the pseudonym, which the last, Nazimova was the last name of a heroine in a novel, and Alla was a variation of her name, at the age of 10, before performing publicly on the violin. Her father forbade her from using the family name, fearing that she would embarrass him.
Yeah, because, like, performers at this time, it was, like, akin to being a sex worker,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yep.
Which is insane.
Yep. After she made her debut to enthusiastic applause...
Playing the violin. At 10.
He took her home and caned her so severely that he broke her arm.
What the fuck?
Just because a few provincial fools applaud you, don't imagine you're Paganini, he said. I don't know who Paganini is, but I assume that he's a, or she is a, you know, violin-playing progeny of some kind.
He broke his own child's arm
yep.
because she was loved at a performance.
Uh-huh, and he didn't want her to get a big head about it.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
She's only 10.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Gross.
So, already wounded psychologically by the departure of her unstable mother 3 years earlier.
Oh, she just left?
She just left. Alla, in her unhappiness, began to examine Nazimova from the outside, analyzing the way she looked and criticizing the unattractive way she supposedly wept. In short, she took naturally to acting.
Naturally.
She said, if I have lived not beautifully, I must act beautifully.
Oh, I kind of like that.
Me too. After her parents separated, she was shuffled among boarding schools, foster homes, and relatives. But as a teenager, she finally began to direct those dramatic energies and pursue her interest in the theater, taking acting lessons at the Academy of Acting in Moscow.
Yeah, they were pretty serious.
Yeah, she joined Stanislavski's Moscow Art Theater.
Yeah, back when Stanislavski was alive.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yep.
Shit. That's
yep.
like... For anybody who listens to this who is not an actor, Stanislavski is the father of modern acting teaching, like, in America, too.
Yep.
Like, he's revered as, like, the best, like, the his teachings are what we base our schooling on now.
Yeah.
And offshoots of it, like,
yeah.
Meisner and Strasberg.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
All that.
Stella
Adler.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So she used the name Alla Nazimova while she was taking those classes, or no, while she was in the Moscow Art Theater. And that was the first time that Alla Nazimova was on the stage. So her theater career blossomed early.
Art Theater.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
89, 99, she was 24.
24. Thank you.
That's embarrassing how long it took all of us to get there.
I wasn't even trying, so that's part of it.
Competition was less back then.
Anyway, her theater career blossomed early, and by 1903, she was 24, and she was a major star in Moscow and St. Petersburg. She toured Europe, including London and Berlin, with her boyfriend at the time, whose name I didn't even bother putting in here because he doesn't really ever factor in again. So I was like, what's the point? In 1905, they moved to New York City together. And after an unsuccessful business venture, they tried to open a theater on the Lower East Side, and it just didn't take. He went home, and she stayed.
To Russia?
Yeah, he went home to Russia, and she stuck around in New York. She was like, this is where
I
want to
be.
Here.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah. And thank God, because she soon made her Broadway debut in New York in 1906 in the title role of Hedda Gabler.
Gabler. It's
weird.
Right? Shaw?
Yeah.
Ibsen. Hedda. That's what?
Yeah.
Was she like the original?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't actually know.
That's a fucking great play. Like, most young actresses are like, I want to play Hedda someday.
Well,
Alla Nazimova did it.
She did it, and she was massively popular in that role. And she remained a major Broadway star for years, often acting in the plays of Ibsen and Henrik Ibsen and Anton Chekhov. So by 1912, she was on her way up. She married well-known actor Charles Bryant.
Cool.
And in 1915, with the outbreak of World War I, she was offered a role in the 35-minute play War Brides.
Who wrote that?
I do not know. I didn't write that down.
Okay.
The play and her performance came to the attention of motion picture producer Louis J. Selznick, who was also from the Ukraine and whose second son, David O. Selznick, later became a notable Hollywood filmmaker, producing the film version of Gone with the Wind, as well as Nazimova's final film, Since You Went Away, in 1944. So he was, you know, a big deal for her. Louis Selznick offered Nazimova $30,000 and a $1,000 per day bonus for every day filming went over schedule.
Wait, I'm sorry. That amount of money one more time?
$30,000 and a $1,000 per day bonus for every day filming went over schedule. I know, and this is 19...
And this, in this day and age?
Mm-hmm, this is
that 19... is so much fucking money. I mean, I guess it's no different than what film stars get paid today because they get millions.
They get a fuck ton.
So it's the same.
But still.
Shit.
And this was her first movie. So in 1917, based on the film's success, Nazimova was offered a 5-year, $13,000 a week contract.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Which was $3,000 more than Mary Pickford at the time.
Mary Pickford's huge.
And Mary Pickford was, I believe at this time...
Are these silent films?
These are silent films.
Yeah.
Mary Pickford was the highest paid actress up to this point. And then Nazimova.
Yeah, because there was like a crazy way that contracts worked back then. Like stars would be signed to studios. So not like today where it's just you're signed onto a project.
Yeah.
It'd be like MGM would go, you're ours, so you're going to be in MGM movies.
Yep.
For 3 years or however long.
Yep.
And we'll pay you this much money a week.
Yeah. And so however many movies we can make in that time with you.
You'll get work and we'll pay you.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. $13,000 a week?
Uh-huh. For 5 years.
Okay. I'll take that.
Yeah. And it was $3,000
in today's
more.
Money, I will take that.
Absolutely.
In
then money, $13,000 a week.
It's millions of dollars a week.
I mean, right? $13,000 a week now. Just $13,000 a week now is still obscene.
It's insane. It's crazy money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So her contract awarded her the right to approve director, script, and leading man.
Holy shit!
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They meant business when they signed her.
Yep. 'Cause
that's like a lot. I wonder how much of that she negotiated too.
Yeah.
Or if she was just that good. And they just offered her, because that doesn't seem like it's very in their interest, because they gave her, like, a lot of diva rights.
They gave her a lot of diva rights. And, well, she was, I mean, she was bringing a look that I don't think had quite been...
it's very specific.
Established on screen.
Yeah,
yet.
Yeah.
And when you see pictures of her, you will see.
I looked her up.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
So she looks a little bit like if you put vamp makeup on like Angelica Houston.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, she looks like Morticia Adams almost. So if you think about her like that, like she really made that look popular and perfected it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so her first film, Revelation, with her husband Charles Bryant, was a success, as was its follow-up, Toys of Fate. And at that point, Nazimova moved to Los Angeles to begin production on her third film, Eye for Eye. By the end of 1918, her film career flourishing,
mm-hmm.
she spent $65,000 on an imposing California Spanish home at 8080 Sunset Boulevard.
I mean, whatever. She made that money in less than 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I know. It was nothing. At that point, it was still an unpaved dirt track. So she built this estate, this mansion up from the ground, and proceeded to spend another $65,000 modeling the interior, building a pool, and landscaping the property's 3.5 acres. She named
Shit.
It, yeah, she named it the Garden of Allah.
Oh.
Which factors in, crazily enough, it was something that stood for a very long time after, I mean, way after she passed, and it became infamous for a lot of different things, other than just the fact that she built it and lived there and had all of these.
Is it still there?
It's not. It was bulldozed in, like... 80s or 90s or something.
Bullshit.
Can you believe
what
that?
What a terrible time.
And now it's like a strip mall. So fucked.
That's upsetting.
It's so fucked. So she named it the Garden of Allah, and this is where stories of her sexuality really began to surface, because the estate became a popular gathering spot for the Hollywood intelligentsia, who would flock there for the salon, in which literature, art, and theater was discussed at length.
Sounds very Oscar Wilde.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Oscar Wilde spent time there.
Of course he fucking did.
Yeah. But it was also a place where she spent time wooing women, and very possibly Greta Garbo.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. If Greta Garbo, like...
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Greta Garbo was another screen
who is my,
siren.
My, I love Greta Garbo
mm-hmm.
so much.
Mm-hmm. And she's probably another one we should do.
God, she is something else.
Yeah. So it attracted a largely lesbian following, and which made it somewhat notorious.
Her house did?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Because she was there, and she was attracting a largely lesbian following. you know.
So we're saying Hollywood has always been super gay friendly.
Yes. I mean, yeah. She is said, Allah is said to have coined the term sewing circle as a euphemism for gatherings, large gatherings of lesbian women, which is a term that is
it's
used
like,
outside
it's like,
of this.
Oh, honey, I'm just going to sewing circle.
Mm-hmm.
That, which is code for like swinging lesbian.
Yep.
Parties.
You know, yeah. Swinging lesbian parties. That's exactly... I mean, because these parties were wild. They were, like, notorious for getting out of control.
Was there opium there? Probably.
Probably. I don't know.
That seems like that era.
I don't know. Actually, know if that's true.
I'm a historian.
Ah, la, la, la. From 1917 to 1922, she wielded considerable influence and power in Hollywood. She helped start the careers of both of Rudolph Valentino's wives, Jean Acker.
Both of them.
Jean Acker, a silent film star, and Natasha Rambova, who was a costume and set designer.
Oh, sweet.
She definitely had an affair with Acker. No one is quite sure if she had one with Rambova, although they did have a professional relationship. She was very impressed by Rambova's skills as an art director, and so Rambova designed the innovative sets for Nazimova's film productions of the films Camille and Salon. Of those Nazimova's confirmed to have been involved with romantically, the list includes actress Eva Le Gallienne. Mm-hmm. French lady?
Where?
Gallienne? Yeah. Okay. Film director...
Le Gallien.
Le Gallien. Mm-hmm. Okay. Film director Dorothy Arzner. Writer Mercedes de Acosta. And Oscar Wilde's niece, Dolly Wilde.
Which I'm sure he was like, great.
Yeah, enjoy. Have fun. I know I do.
There's a photo at the Strand that I saw yesterday, that one of their postcards. It was Oscar Wilde and friend. And I was like,
okay.
Oh, no, that's a pretty boy. That's totally his lover. But whatever.
That's the kind of shit. Okay, whatever. Yep. I'm not going to go into that. What's funny is, so I already said this, but I wrote it in here. What's funny is that there doesn't seem to be any consensus on whether she was lesbian or bi. She did have male lovers, like, when she was in Russia, and then she was...
And here's the thing.
Whatever.
Being bi doesn't mean 50-50.
Right. But it also...
Every single person's definition of every single bisexual person is different. And, like, you can be bisexual... Little PSA for Pride Month. You can be bisexual and never have dated. Like, you can have only dated women as a lady and be bisexual if you're attracted to men. Like, that's the thing. It's whatever your identity is. You can be bisexual and only have slept with one gender or another or whatever. Another quick little contention. Because some people have problems with bisexual being... non-inclusive of transgendered people, and I disagree, because bi means two, doesn't mean men and women. To me, bi means same and different. So you're attracted to the same gender and different genders.
Yeah, I like that. I have never heard of it put that way, but that's very accurately describes it to me.
Yeah, me too. So, yeah. Anyway.
I like that.
Anyway.
I think part of why it's in dispute is not just because people misunderstand bisexuality, although I absolutely think that's some of it for some people.
And maybe she was a lesbian.
Yeah, I think it's also possible that she was using men to get to certain places.
Yeah.
Because she was, I didn't leave this in here, but she did have, you know, relationships with men so that they would pay for things for her.
Yeah, because women weren't as easily mobile because they were dependent on their families and their husbands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So back in Russia, she had a lot of relationships with men, in part so that she could do the things that she wanted to do.
And then when she had the money and power and home that she wanted, she was like, all right, well, now I get to do whatever I want.
Right. So it could be either.
Which is fine.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I'm in support of either situation.
Me too. So, okay. So while all of this is happening, like, she's just obviously bought the home of her dreams and she's having all of these crazy, insane parties, she was now confident enough in her abilities as a film star and somebody whose contract allowed her to pick teams for films and whatnot, that she started producing and writing her own films in which she also starred.
Nice.
So
full Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah. Her film adaptations of works...
Or is Kenneth Branagh going full Alan Asimova?
Oh, well... You don't know?
I do know.
Oh.
Because she was first.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Oh, my God.
Keep talking.
So in her film adaptations of works by such notable writers as Oscar Wilde and Ibsen...
Yeah!
Uh-huh. She developed her own filmmaking techniques, which were considered daring at the time. Her projects included... including A Doll's House...
Wait, really?
Yes.
I mean...
In 1922, she did a film adaptation of A Doll's House based on Ibsen's play.
Well, all right. I mean, I guess that's the thing. She was Hedda Gabler in Doll's House. I assume she was Nora.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she was... By the time her career was really, like, winding down, she was considered one of the people who knew Ibsen best. Not just, like, as an actress, but as somebody who had adapted his works. Oh, hi, Kat. You need to come up here?
Need to be a lap kitty?
There you go. You know, so she was considered kind of an expert on Ibsen.
Yeah.
So her projects included A Doll's House in 1922 and Salome in 1923.
Salome?
Mm-hmm. Oh, duh. God. So I've been saying that wrong this whole time.
It's okay. I was the one I'm the one who has a degree in theater. You're the one who has a degree in film.
Yeah, I don't know any of these things. Okay.
You know about film.
Uh-huh.
I have 2 degrees in theater, so.
Yeah, bitch. You better correct me on this shit.
Yeah.
Okay. So Salome, thank you, based on Wilde's play, Oscar Wilde's play, obviously, were bold, experimental, and completely ahead of their time.
Yeah, they were.
Mm-hmm. Which means they were critical and commercial failures.
Of course.
Of course. By 1925, Charles Bryant, her husband, who was then 43, surprised the press, Nazimova's fans, and Nazimova herself by marrying Marjorie Gilcooley, 23 years old, in Connecticut.
Wait, how?
Uh-huh.
How is that legal?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you.
What happened?
When the press uncovered the fact that Charles had listed his current marital status as single on his new marriage license, the revelation that the marriage between Alla and Charles had been a sham.
What?
Or what's known as a lavender marriage from the beginning, embroiled Nazimova in a scandal that further damaged her career. So
it was just a pretend marriage?
It was a pretend marriage.
For a PR situation?
It was a pretend marriage because that entire time, he had been telling her that he was gay. And so she married him to protect his star status, married, quote unquote, because obviously they didn't actually get married, but they lived together for 20 years as husband and wife.
In name only?
In name only.
So were they ever lovers? I guess not if he said he was gay, so she's like, well, whatever, me too, bitch.
Yeah.
Like,
from what I understand, they were each other's
But then weird. He married a woman?
But then he married a woman. So,
wait, how?
This is the problem, right?
I'm so confused, because if they also lived together for 20 years, if it was a marriage in name only and he said he was gay, wouldn't she have seen him, like, flirting with men or, like, being with men?
Yeah, no, I think she was fully aware that all of that was happening.
Was he bi too, maybe?
Well, that's the thing, right? Nobody believed that bisexuality, still people don't think right. bisexuality is a thing.
Right.
And so when you have situations like this where men marry and sleep with both men and women,
well, men especially have a harder time with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But history doesn't know how to talk about those people.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a man slept with a man. We found out about this person who was alive in 1750 and he slept with men. He's gay. Well, you don't know if he's 100% gay. Because maybe he was, but we don't fucking know.
Then, shockingly, he marries a woman and now we don't know what to think. And it's like, well, maybe you do know what to think and you're just not, like, being tolerant. I don't know.
Bi-erasure is real.
Yeah. So, I honestly don't know the answers to your questions because nobody really delved into the details there.
That's so weird.
Mm-hmm. It's really strange.
Mm.
But so him doing that obviously made it clear to people that they had not actually been married.
Which sucks, because of course she's going to get the most fallout from that.
She got a lot of fallout. So by that point, obviously her last two movies had been critical failures, financial failures. Her husband left her
for a much younger woman.
For a much younger woman.
Even though
surprising her because she thought the
surprising
time,
everybody,
you know, that he was gay. So
surprising the world because it was like, aren't you already married? And then surprising her because she's like, wait, aren't you already gay?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I love it. Aren't you already gay? So by now, Alla was in financial straits. And this makes me so sad, but she agreed to allow her mansion to be developed into a hotel.
Oh.
So, yeah, the property, renamed the Garden of Alla Hotel and Villas, opened on January 9th, 1927. Although the hotel was an instant...
Did she still live there?
I'll answer that question in a second.
Okay.
So, although the hotel was an instant success, the plan bankrupted her entirely.
Wait, why?
Because she had to do all this remodeling, and so she had to sell her share in order to stay afloat. And so what makes me especially sad about this is that the Garden of Alla Hotel went on from here to be extremely famous and beloved by artists and writers like Oscar Wilde. And it had a long and sordid history, like even the mafia at some point.
Oh,
like
yeah.
There's stuff with the mafia there.
But it wasn't hers anymore.
Mm. So even though she built this place and it was named after her, it she never reaped the benefits of its successes from that point on. So from there, with financial backers withdrawing their support for her films, she gave up on the film industry and returned to Broadway. In the early 1940s, she appeared in a few more films, playing Robert Taylor's mother in the movie Escape in 1940,
okay.
And Tyrone Power's mother in Blood and Sand in 1941.
And now she's the mom, and she's not...
Now she's the
mom.
I
mean, I guess she's in her 50s?
40s-ish.
Well, if it's 1940 and she was born in 79, she's in her 50s or
yeah.
something.
Yeah. Oh,
she's
yeah.
older.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't know why I said 40s. So this late return to motion pictures fortunately preserves Nazimova and her art on sound film.
Oh, yeah. Did she have a accent at this point? Or do you think at that point?
I don't know. We should go look some of them up and see.
Yeah.
Because I bet she does.
Yeah.
Probably.
But she never had kids.
She never had kids.
She was in a lavender marriage.
She was in a lavender marriage.
Fucking a lot of ladies.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So in 1930, before a lot of this, she began a relationship with another actress named Gleska Marshall, with whom she lived until her death in 1945. Which there's... it's so crazy because out of all of this, there is less about her relationship with Gleska than anything. There's in all the articles I found, there is one line. So I don't know how they met. I don't know why Gleska was like the love of her life. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. She was an actress. But I assume they must have met while she was, well, after she had returned to Broadway. That's kind of the only assumption I can make. But they lived, the two of them rented one of the villas in the Garden of Allah, the same building she built, where she used to have her famous wild parties, and where she had wooed and loved many women, and they lived together there until her death.
How'd she die?
She died of, I wrote it down and then I cut it out. It's like something
heart-related. Like just natural causes?
Yeah, I think it was just causes.
What year was it?
1945.
Oh, yeah. So she, you know, 65 or so.
Yeah. But there's one picture of the two of them that I found that I should send to you.
Yeah.
That is of the two of them sitting. It's like I think the picture was taken in like 1944 or something. And they're sitting in, presumably, the garden at the Garden of Allah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even though it's nice that, yes, even though she had to rent it, that she still got to live there, and it wasn't torn down before she died. Like,
yeah, that's. I mean, it was there for a while.
It was there for a long time. So yeah.
This one.
Yes, that's the one.
Goddaughter Nancy Davis, later Reagan.
Uh huh.
What?
Oh, I forgot. I forgot about that. Yeah.
She was Nancy Reagan's godmother.
She was Nancy Reagan's godmother.
Oh my God. So, which is kind of ironic.
It's all weird. Well, Nancy and Ronald were both actors. Come on, like
that's right.
She's kind of cool. Like she originated the screen vamp look of the 1920s. She built this like crazy hotel that became
through these gay parties.
Through all these wild gay parties, like started the careers of several, you know, gay people, and
gay adjacent.
Fucked at least one of Rudolph Valentino's wives.
That's so crazy.
I know. So...
Sewing circles.
I know. Like...
Thanks, Hannah. She's fucking cool.
Hell yeah.
And you're...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Well articulated. Oh no, Ben's laughing at us. That's when you know it's Ben.
And oh yeah, you're so right. I scared the cat.
Jesus.
One of our listeners is well acquainted with her.
Yeah, which I discovered as
you were googling her.
I was like, wait, I recognize this name. Why do I recognize this name?
Oh, she listens to this podcast.
Oh, yes.
I knew I recognized the name too. I was like, I know the Nazimova. What? Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
she's going to be so happy.
I hope so. I hope I did it right.
She'll send in any corrections,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Okay, good.
About it.
Good. That's Alla Nazimova, and
She's fucking cool.
That's my book report. Thank you.
Thanks, Mom.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Wait, no. Not bye.
No, I know.
Tell me about history.
I'll tell you some history. Okay, so there
we're June 27th now?
We're on June 27th, and there were a lot of, like...
Sick.
Of things.
June, a lot of shit happens in June.
A lot of shit happens in June.
People get wild in the summer.
I guess so. You know? It's just a thing that they do. In 1693, I love this one, the first women's magazine, Ladies Mercury...
What?
...is published in London.
Wow.
In 16...
Really making use of that printing press.
Oh, yeah. 1693, Ladies Mercury.
Uh-huh. All right. What does that mean?
I don't know. I will be honest.
All right.
They liked mercury at the time. They didn't think it was poisonous quite yet, so maybe it was a nice thing.
Or maybe it's planetary?
Maybe it's planetary.
Who fucking knows? I don't know. Let's not posit things we don't know about.
Okay, that's fair.
Even though we do that all the time.
Yeah. This one has nothing to do with women, but I kind of liked it. 1743, War of the Austrian Succession. Battle of Dettingen in Bavaria. King George II of Britain personally leads troops into battle, and this is the very last time a British monarch would command troops in the field. 1743.
That
was the last time.
That feels
like too old.
Yeah. Although most male members of British family have served in the military, at least.
Yeah, but they haven't led troops into battle.
Yeah, that's not really how that works anymore. But it seems like it should have been later. But I guess Queen Victoria did ascend the throne in mm-hmm. the mid-1800s, so... Yep. Was he her dad? No.
Grandpa? No.
Grandpa, probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Any what's?
So, 1833. Oh, I like this one, and I think maybe I'll do her at some point. 1833, Prudence Crandall, a white woman, is arrested for conducting an academy for black women at Canterbury in Connecticut.
What year?
1833.
Oh, that's before the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
Yeah. So she is arrested for teaching black women.
Stuff. Dear Prudence. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good job, Prudence.
In 1894, American Annie Londonderry. Okay.
Cool name, bro.
Sets out to become the first woman to bicycle around the world.
Wait, that's not physically possible.
She completes her journey in September 1895. I'm sure she took a boat. I'm sure she took a boat somewhere.
Are you?
She
are you
Jesus
certain?
Herself across the ocean.
On a bike.
On a bicycle.
It's not Jesusing if it's on a bike.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm sure that they're these are one-liners, my friends.
Okay.
I thought this one was interesting, mainly because I think a lot of people don't actually know that this happened. But in 1950, North Korean troops reach Seoul, and the UN asks UN members to aid South Korea. So Harry Truman orders the U.S. Air Force and Navy into the Korean conflict. And I think a lot of people don't know that we entered the Korean War.
As opposed to being dragged into it?
As opposed to not being in it at all. Like, I've talked to people who are like, we fought in Korea? Whoa.
That must be like a millennial situation. Because,
I mean,
I know it is kind of like the forgotten war mm-hmm. because it's like, there's World War II and there's Vietnam and people forget that
right. There
were a lot of men who had PTSD from Korea. But that's
yeah.
the whole fucking reason why North Korea and South Korea exist in the first place. Not specifically because the U.S. went into it, but because the U.S. and Russia decided... It was literally the U.S. and Russia fighting
mm-hmm.
each other via Korea.
Yep.
That was a terrible way to say that, but it rhymes. But yeah, no, and so that's why... North Korea is very dictatory is because they had Russia's support, and so the Soviet Union affected the way that their culture developed, and that's why South Korea is like K-pop and all that fun stuff. I mean, like, obviously they have their own culture. I'm not going to say it's because of America, because
nope.
that's really, really, like, reductionist. But I mean, just like South Korea's culture was, you know, in the war, like, America was like, we're fighting for freedom and capitalism, and so that culture has been very influenced by that. North Korea in the way of Russia.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of has spiraled out of control, and now we might die because our president is a piece of shit. How do people not know we fought in Korea? That's insane.
Okay, I will be honest. I was not taught about Korea. I don't remember learning about
Korea. It's like a blip.
I know about Korea because my grandfather fought in Korea.
Your papu?
No, my other grandfather.
Because he was World War II. I was like, he was old by then.
Yeah, papu was World War II. My dad's dad fought in Korea.
Yeah, I don't know that I have...
He was in the Navy, I think?
I don't know if any of my family members...
That's really...
And at that period, because, like, my grandfathers were too young for World War II. Mm-hmm. And so my great-grandfathers were too old for World War II.
So they kind of fell
in that. I know my stepdad fought in Vietnam. He was drafted.
Oof.
Yeah, he, like, dropped out of school, out of college, and immediately was drafted. Stay in school, kids.
Speaking of, in 1980, the first female state police graduates from New Jersey. They're the first graduating class of female state police graduates in 1980.
That's late.
I know.
So what were how what?
Well, don't you know what police women were doing up until that point, Deanna, from last week's episode? They were just comforting and helping women.
They were basically glorified secretaries and therapists.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yep. So, yeah. What are you excited about this week?
So, none of this will have faded by the time this episode airs. I'm excited because... I am about to go home and see my family and my cat.
Yay!
My kitty, who's the cutest, sweetest, most precious angel, and my mom, who I haven't seen in months. And my stepdad may not be there, because apparently my sister's had open heart surgery recently, and he chose not to tell me about that until, like, he was gone. She's fine. She's fine. She's doing very well, but she had, like, a defective heart valve.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, she's in her 40s, so it's, like, way too soon to have open heart surgery.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm excited to see my family. One of my best friends is getting married.
Yay!
So it's just going to be... That's a dumb one, dorky one that nobody else can really relate to other than, you know, family love, but...
Whatever. You know what?
It's not promoting anything. It's not... I'm just excited to take a little mini vacation. By the time this episode airs, I will be ready for another vacation. I promise you.
Because you're doing something at this wedding that is exciting.
I am singing at this wedding.
Damn straight you are.
Yes, I am.
That's very exciting.
Yep.
You have a beautiful voice.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Not that anybody on this podcast would know that based on how I sing here.
They know and they love it.
They know in their hearts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
And on that note.
On that note. Peace out, witches.
Bye for now. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Thank you for listening.
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Blueberry, and more.
Basically anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you like our podcast, it would be really helpful if you could please like and subscribe, rate and review, share with your friends on social media, word of mouth, mm-hmm. all of that. It's great.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter at GWBB Podcast. Instagram is the same, and we are on Facebook under Good Witches, Bad Bitches Podcast.
And hey, guess what? If you want to hear all of our episodes, they are all up at our website, gwbbpodcast.com.
If you have a story about a woman in your life that you want to share with us and that you want us to share on our podcast at some point, you can email us at gwbbpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey guys, you know what? If you like what you hear, maybe please consider a little bit of supporting us financially by visiting our tip jar. The link is in the show notes. Every little bit helps. It just kind of makes it so that we can keep this going, so that it has some longevity. So just think about it. See how you feel about it.
Or you can support this podcast directly by buying us a coffee on...
our Ko-Fi.
So that is ko-fi.com/GWBB podcast. Coffee start at $3 because that's generally the price of a fancy coffee, and it just helps us keep the ship going. Good Witches, Bad Bitches is produced by Moon Bounce and powered by Pinecast.
Boom, boom, boom.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening.